hold you up for 8 or 10 hours in customs. There's no rhyme or reason to them.
Unpredictable.
They're very unpredictable. I don't know what happened. I mean, we were very fortunate, but I'll tell you, we didn't have much more difficulty in our 2-week sojourn traveling around than we would in any country. And I know they knew what we were doing. I mean, you know, can't hide it.
Some feeling about the lives of these people, how they lived.
Yes, it's I'll tell you, it's a depressing country, though. We were glad to get out of it, even though nobody interfered with us. And it's most depressing in Moscow. The further you get out of Moscow, the less depressing you feel, and the freer you feel, and the people are freer. Mm-hmm. And when you get to Mongolia, like we went to Tashkent, there was... Not that they were carrying banners and picketing, you know, but you didn't feel as closed in as you did in Moscow. Moscow is a terribly depressing city, I think.
Well, it has been said, Mr. Baskin, that the roots of your strength stem from your strong ties in the Democratic Party, your leadership in local Jewish community, your personality, your ability as a fundraiser, and your generosity in campaign contributions. I quote Meyer Burger. Would you agree?
I never disagree with Meyer. I learned. I learned the easiest thing with Meyer is not to disagree. No. Mike and I have been friends.
That was in the Post Gazette.
Friends for many, many years. And we have some good arguments about certain positions that each of us takes, but I think he's a person who's done a lot, I think, for other people too.
Well, he says you have.
Well, then maybe we have a mutual admiration society. Maybe neither one of us deserves it, but we're going to keep on touting each other.
Would you now like to turn to your children and their lives? Can you tell us something about, Janice, her education, career, and so on?
Well, Janice is 34, and she's our oldest. She was adopted by my first wife and myself, and she now lives in Baltimore. She's married, and she went through college, Ohio University. In Athens, I guess it is. Athens, and then...
Does she have any children?
No, and later on she went to the University of Maryland Institute of Art, or I forget what they call it, and she's now doing some painting, and she's getting into some shows, but you know, trying to be a successful artist is very tough, and she seems quite happy. My other daughter, Susan, who is also adopted, is 30. She'll be 33 next month, and she lives in Tucson, Arizona, and she's not married. She was married, but she's not now, and she seems to be getting along there, seems to like it there.
What does she do?
She went through training as a... call it when you do hair and cosmetics. Yeah, but they have to go through school, get a license, and I don't know what's
the
well, whatever it is. And she seems to be happy doing that.
There are no grandchildren.
No.
I see.
I have two stepdaughters.
I see. There's quite a contrast, I guess, in the way these children were raised with your upbringing.
Yeah, I think so. But I learned a long time ago there's no use trying to tell the younger generation what it was like. First of all, you know, it's sort of silly. It's hard for them to comprehend it. Once in a while I would tell my kids that when I was going to University of Pittsburgh, I worked 48 hours a week while I was going to school, and I earned $15 a week, and I was on my own. I had a room I told him for $3 a week, and with the other $12, I fed myself, and clothed myself. Of course, I never bought any clothes, but clothed myself, and I just paid a little bit of that toward tuition. And I used to tell them that I ate three meals a day for 75 cents. And they were good meals. Now, I mean, what's the use of trying to tell somebody today that that's the way it was?
It has no reality.
It has no reality to it.
But you must have some views on today's mores and permissiveness.
Well, I think I've had a feeling for many years that it was more difficult for a child to grow up in today's environment than it was in mine. And that although it might appear that I had a much tougher time of it, in a sense it was easier because I didn't have anything to think about except working and getting through school. And we didn't have television then. To show us what everybody else was doing or having, and I didn't know too many people that had money, and therefore I think I had less strain than children do today growing up, and I think it's very difficult for them today.
Wouldn't you say there's another aspect in that? You knew what the mores were and what the limits were.
Yeah, there wasn't much to it. There wasn't much choice, let me put it that way. When you don't have much choice and you're subject to discipline, both in the schools and at home, which I was, I think it's a lot easier.
You don't have as many choices.
It's when you have choices that you have trouble, and then you give kids who haven't matured yet a lot of choices, and I think it's very tough. I really do. My two girls grew up, I think, in one of the worst periods for growing up. That was the Vietnam period, you know. And fortunately, they matured, they became more conservative, really. And they sort of thrown off those years.
Well, that's generally happens, doesn't it?
That generally happens, but it was a terrible time, I think, for the children to grow up. And I think today it's very difficult, and it's hard to subject them to discipline. I mean, even if you want to, it's hard to impose something on a youngster when nobody else is doing what you want him to do. Very, very difficult. So, I think. Parent-child relationships today and child-child relationships today are very difficult.
I would agree. Where do you reside at this time, Mr. Baskin?
In Squirrel Hill.
I see. And your present household consists of?
My second wife, Phyllis, and myself. And for a couple of years, it was both of her daughters. Susan was the older one. And Amy the younger. Now it's really just Amy, because Susan's going to law school this fall, and she's been at college, and Amy's going to go to college. So, as I said, Phyllis, for the first time in a long time, I think I'll have some freedom. But they've been very fortunate, my stepdaughters, really. They've been very, very good and relatively very easy to handle. I mean, not that there are some problems as you have with your own children, but I have to say I was pretty fortunate with them, and they're both very, very nice, they're adults now.
Your wife's background, did she have a professional career of any kind?
Well, she went a couple of years at Carnegie Tech, you know, when it was still known as Carnegie Tech, and took up, I think, acting. And then she went, finished up at American University in D.C. Her parents, she lived in D.C., born there, and her parents lived there. So she went back to D.C. and finished American University and then taught for a while.
In what field?
I think in grade school and high school, you know, just general things.
I see.
And now she's she was a little leery of coming to Pittsburgh first. She lived for a couple of years in Chicago before we married. And she liked Chicago, she liked D.C., and she thought coming to Pittsburgh would be terrible.
But we're number one now, that helps.
Well, the point is, she boosted the city long before we came. She's a great fan of the city now. Probably knows it better than most of the people who live here. And she's involved in a lot of activities here now, Planned Parenthood and some Israel Bond fashion shows thing, and a number of other activities that she
Well, she's assumed an active role in the community then. How do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community today? You're still closely identified with Temple Sinai. Would you say it has a definite role in the community?
Well, I think every temple or synagogue has a definite role. I think the role of the temple in the community depends a lot upon the kind of rabbi you have, really.
Oh, that's so true.
And I think the temple is going to play a larger role in terms of relationships with the general community than it has in many years. I think it feels more more safe with itself now. You know, they seem to have building finances more under control. They seem to have a rabbi who they like and who's very interested in community activities. And maybe they're achieving a certain status now after 40 years. It makes them feel comfortable enough. And the leadership, while not really leaders in the general Jewish community as a whole, you know, there are some, but they're not generally thought of as leaders in the general community or the general Jewish community, have been pretty fairly liberal in the way they've been able to handle things. I don't know if I talked to you about their attitude toward mixed marriages, for example. I can't recall when we talked about it, but yes, I think I did.
Yes,
whereas
did.
I said
yes,
that I was
yes.
always surprised that Rhoda Sholem, which was
yes,
the most liberal,
liberal,
most reformed, was against it, and here
That's
this little
correct.
Little
That's
upstart congregation was leading the fight for it. If not leading the fight, at least taking a position.
Do you feel the Jewish community warrants two reformed synagogues?
Yeah, I think so.
They both serve a purpose.
Oh, yeah, well, they each have a good... First of all, Rhoda Sholem was getting too large. It's much smaller now, but still large. I think when they had about 1,200 members. Mm-hmm. When Temple Sinai was started, I think they had about 2,000, you know, families. And the Temple Sinai now has getting close to 600 families, so it's a fairly decent-sized congregation.
How would you contrast Pittsburgh today with Pittsburgh in the past, say, socially, with regard to social consciousness, social services?
You mean just Jews in the Jewish community?
No, in general.
Well, I think in general there's been a breakdown, of course, of some of the lines that used to divide people. I mean, that doesn't mean we arrived at the millennium, but there's no question that there's less of a structured antagonism now toward Jews from non-Jews. There's no question about that. And I think they've been able to participate fairly fully in general community activities, and and they're taken for granted now almost as participants. That doesn't mean that there isn't a lot of feeling still about Jews, and that socially there are places, while they're not barred perhaps, they're not really too welcome, but I'd say it's been a great change over the...
Do you think that breakdown applies to other ethnic groups?
Yes, yes, yes. We just see it from our own
angle.
Yes,
well, then that's a positive.
But it may have broken down even more with Jews than with some others. I don't, in fact, because of the participation of a lot of the Jews in the business life in the community more than perhaps some other ethnic groups.
How would you contrast Pittsburgh today, culturally, with Pittsburgh in the past?
Oh, well, I don't think there's any comparison. Let's see, over the past 35 years, we always had a symphony before that, but it wasn't much. I mean, at least it wasn't recognized. We have a symphony that I think is recognized as a major symphony. We have a ballet, which is measurably better than it was years ago. And I think this, while it doesn't compare perhaps with a top ballet company, certainly gives us a very respectable showing here. We have an opera now that seems to be livening up. We have all kinds of public theaters going. We have the library, of course. We've had it for years, but... you know, it's becoming, it's more modernized. Escape Museum has added to it. The Buell Planetarium is planning some additional functions. The zoo is being much improved over what it was. I think for a city as small as it is, well, you really have to think of Pittsburgh as a center for a three-county area, but you know, for the smallness of the city in terms of population and geographically, I don't know of any city in the country that has more.
We've made great progress.
Yes, certainly. It's been, I think the demographics of the population are going to change quite a bit over the next 20 years.
How so?
Well, because, you know, up through the 50s and maybe 60s, it was a working man's town. And that's when I say working man. I mean, it was basic. It was coal and steel. It was a factory town, a mine town in terms of the kind of people. And as a result, you didn't have, they weren't that interested in some of these cultural activities. What you're having today is a different kind of working population developing. It's more service-oriented, I think, be more educated on the whole, formally educated. And I think they'll probably make more money on the average. And so you're going to see, I think, a different kind of predominance in the population than before. Hard to tell just exactly how it will affect us politically. We may become a little more conservative than we've been. I don't know. And culturally, I think it'll help, but it'll be interesting to see the development. No question, it's going to change.
Well, politically, as compared with the past, would you say that? We're more responsive to community needs?
Well, I don't know what really you mean by that.
Social services?
Well, I think even you have to compare social services in those days to what was accepted as social services. You know, in the olden days, as the kids say, in the olden days, social services were feeding people from soup kitchens and maybe having a few medical people, personnel going around tenement dwellings to help people, or having clinics and so forth. Those were social services in those days. Now, you have a lot more sophisticated social services today. I don't know if you compare the kinds of worlds that there's, I suppose there's been more recognition, more to do. On the other hand, you now have people who seem to be saying that we ought to go backwards in our social responsibilities to people. So
now we have the bad people.
Yeah, there's always a pendulum. So we'll cut out social services for a while, then we'll find out, well, you need some of them again in a different form.
Well, don't you think that's been due to the Reagan administration's
policy?
Well,
sure. Yeah, sure, a lot of it. And some of it is probably justified. I mean, you know, you can go too far on any course. But now, in trying to make some corrections, they're going too far. That's the way we are in this country. The pendulum swings, and eventually it comes to the middle for a while, and it swings again.
Environmentally, would you say we have more awareness in terms of pollution, chemicals, water?
No question about it. Again, whether we overemphasize some of that or not, I don't know. Sometimes I think we do. They want to make, I don't know if you can make this a risk-free world.
It never has been, I guess.
It never will be, but here again, it's like everything else. If you're interested in the program, you go to excess, and that's the way you get it moving. And then it settles down, you know. There's no question we're becoming more concerned with our environment. In many ways, but whether we're getting overly concerned in certain aspects, I don't know. It's hard to say.
In retrospect, Mr. Baskin, what would you rate as your most significant accomplishment or success?
I don't know. I really don't. I don't happen to think I've been that success. I happen to think I'm really an underachiever. I really could have done a lot more with my time and energy. So I don't happen to think I'm much of a success.
I don't think there are many people who would agree with you.
Well, I really do think I could have and should have done more in a lot of ways.
Well, is there anything you would do differently if you had to do it over?
Oh, sure. Everybody says they never would, but I'm one who's willing to say I've done a lot of things differently. That's always the advantage of hindsight. On the other hand, I have no complaints. You know, I think I've been very fortunate. Had a lot of good breaks. A lot of people have helped me. I've been very fortunate about in a number of instances, and I certainly can't complain at all about the opportunities I've had been given. But I do think I probably could have done better along the way. But I guess any one of us could say that.
I would gather. Over the years, your firm has been strongly supportive of blacks in the community. I read that when you first established your law firm in the Frick Building, you hired the first black secretary to ever work in that building.
I think that's true.
Also, your firm was influential in getting 15% minority provisions in the contract for One Oxford Center.
I think we worked out the basic agreement that's sort of been followed since then.
And 20% minimum for Warner Cable Company.
Yes.
Today, I understand, I think I'm right, you have blacks in your present firm.
Oh, we've always had them. We have black partners, female and male. always try to make it a point, not on a quota system, of course, but to have as much variety,
a mix,
in a firm as I could get. We were also the first really supporters of female lawyers, really, and so we have a mixed bag. We have all kinds of religions, ethnic backgrounds, races. So we tried to do that.
All of this significant policy with regard to blacks in particular, well ahead of your time, is certainly in contrast with the criticism leveled at you for representing the government of South Africa.
Yes, I thought, well, I could see why they were criticizing it. I'm not sure that, I'm still not sure that they were right. On the other hand, as I told the Human Relations Commission, it bothered me somewhat, even though as a lawyer, I think you should be representing a client without fear of being criticized. But I understood where they were coming from, and I'd say that most of the black leaders, although they took the position that we shouldn't be representing them, we're not as combative, you know, as they could have been or normally are in a situation like that. And that my biggest problem came from a political source that was white and who probably had less conviction about some of that stuff than I did. Yeah.
But you did sever your connections, I believe.
Yeah, it was a really painful separation because it really damaged what we were building up generally. So it was a painful kind of decision to make.
Is there any other information you'd like to cover or add at this time? Anything we haven't covered?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, thank you, Mr. Baskin, for a most interesting and informative interview. I believe it'll be a significant addition to our oral history collection in the film library.
I don't know how significant, but at least it'll be there.
It'll be there if someone wants to do research.
Yeah.
Look at it.
How many of these are you doing?
Is the tape still going?
Yes.
This.